social calendar, so let's be smart about it, people. We don't want to have too many positive COVID tests coming out of this weekend. But yeah, I feel like life is coming really fast this weekend. There's a lot of converging things going on. We're flipping the calendar, like you said. We're doing the whole time change thing. Winter is coming. So a lot to look forward to. I'm excited. I was a little bummed out earlier this week when it was pretty hot and humid.
Yeah, things are changing. We're moving into November. 2 months to go here in 2020. It's been quite a year, I think we all agree with. It is, I think, a fine time for Tennessee to take a break. And I thought that at the beginning of the season. I thought that Tennessee would play better football in the first half of the season than we saw. The record, I thought, had a chance to be at this kind of position. But the way things went against Kentucky would obviously be the big difference in what most people expected. But even before the season, I thought, okay, you split the season. 5 games, take a week off, 5 more games. And it was set up at least to be tough opponent, weak opponent, weaker. I don't think there are too many weak opponents in the SEC, especially with Arkansas looking better. Kentucky's a tough, obviously, tough out. But Texas A&M and Auburn were the only 2 games back-to-back that were projected to be, you know, top 15 opponents at the beginning of the season. But here we are, halfway through, and Tennessee has things to work on. Need to rest up and get some guys healthier, but that would apply to just about anybody at this point. For Tennessee, it would apply strongly along the offensive line, and I would say in the defensive backfield, as there's the torn pec that has affected Bryce Thompson. He's continued to play while it heals, and then Lonte Taylor's been out. They had to work Sean Schamberger back in after a couple of weeks. So in the secondary, I'd say this past week and this upcoming week are really important, and the same for play along the line of scrimmage.
I'm also glad for a break for Tennessee's sake, not only from the injury perspective, but you saw, I still blame a lot of the Kentucky hangover, or not the Kentucky hangover, but the way Tennessee played in that first half of the Kentucky game on just the absolute deflating second half of the Georgia game. Now, I still can't explain what happened in the second half of the Kentucky game. I don't understand it, because you made so many mistakes and you were still completely in that game. You were only down 10. I will just never understand how they came out in the second half and you had lack of effort concerns and things like that. Like, that boggles my mind. But I do feel like the shaky Kentucky start was giving Kentucky some credit for what they were doing, but also it was just such a mental deflation to play Georgia the way you did in the first half versus the second half. So you were coming on the heels of that. And the way Alabama took care of Tennessee last week, I mean, it was just like, move over, get out of the way, we're headed down to Atlanta. I just felt like it was nice to get a break so that you can go into the Arkansas game. I mean, Arkansas has got a tough game this week with Texas A&M, and then they got to turn right around and play the Vols in Fayetteville. I just felt like that is good for Tennessee, who's going to have to be on their game. I mean, they've got to take their A game into Fayetteville to beat the Razorbacks right now.
Yeah, maybe so. I don't know if Tennessee needs its A game, but they need to be the phrase you've heard so much, clean football. They need to be cleaner. They need to have less turnovers, especially less turnovers returned for touchdowns, because you have 3 straight games with that happening, and that's not good. That's something that will allow Arkansas to beat you if you turn it over and set them up for an easy score, or of course they just pick it off and run it back, or in the Alabama game, Air Gray fumbles and it's picked up and run back for a touchdown. Arkansas is it's a better team than I think was projected at the beginning of the season. We like A&M, is that right, on our 6-pack challenge? Or are
me
we split
and you
on
differed.
That one?
Yeah, me and you differed on okay. that one. But Joel and I picked Arkansas both, so if we want to go up on the starting lineup.
So I'm hoping to be wrong.
Yeah, you're okay. Hoping to be wrong on that one.
Yeah. A&M's a sizable favorite in that game. So we'll see what happens against A&M this weekend for Arkansas, as the Razorbacks have had a couple weeks to get ready for that game. And by the way, that's probably one Tennessee fans want to watch if you're trying to circle games. Okay, what do I want to watch with Tennessee not playing? That is a matchup between Tennessee's next 2 opponents. Tennessee will play Arkansas next Saturday and then Texas A&M the week after that. So you can kind of scout both teams that Tennessee will face in the next 2 weeks. But I look at the personnel and I don't think it's close. Tennessee should absolutely be the better team. And despite Arkansas being better and Sam Pittman doing a good job, that would still be a game to me where if Tennessee comes back home with a loss, especially at this point when it's such a necessary win, it would be in the inexcusable category. You can't go lose that game.
Yeah, we were talking about it leading up to the Alabama game and the different outcomes for the Alabama game, what kind of emphasis that would put then on the Arkansas game, and with another blowout loss sort of in that negative column, it makes the Arkansas game a must win. And I don't think there's anything wrong with saying that. I mean, if you want to have a solid season, if you want to keep your recruiting class intact as much as possible going into just such a weird signing year, I think the Arkansas game is definitely important just from a perception standpoint.
Yeah, if you look at the 247 Sports team talent composite, Tennessee is 15th in the country, just behind Auburn. Those rosters are very comparable. Tennessee is just ahead of Florida State, ahead of Miami, ahead of Michigan. Arkansas comes in at number 25. Their average player rating would be a little bit better than a 3.5 star. Tennessee is just below a 4 star. By the way, Kentucky is one spot behind Arkansas.
Okay, so I was going to ask you that.
Kentucky's number 26. Yeah, Kentucky's number 26 in the team talent composite. Number one may surprise you. I don't know. Georgia's number one, just ahead of Alabama. And again, this is across the roster. If you look at the average player, Alabama's average player is just ahead of Georgia. But your top five talented teams: Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, and the Texas Longhorns.
Ooh,
hello, Tom Herman.
Ouch. And they're an underdog this week. There's that. Going back to our conversation, though, and I'm glad you pointed out Kentucky, because I was going to ask you about that. It just goes to show you, and that's why I said Tennessee needs to take their A game, because if they do open themselves up, like Tennessee is just not in a position to walk into any game thinking all we have to do is show up. You know, all we have to do is not make mistakes. They're still going to have to make plays. You know, Jalen Hyatt's coming off a great game versus Alabama. Let's build on that. You know, use those positives as building blocks and take care of games that are winnable. That's just what they have to do over these next five.
Heather, the list of receivers for the New England Patriots this weekend, as we look ahead to everything else going on, we look at the SEC, and not two incredibly interesting matchups, I would say. In the NFL, it starts with the Steelers and the Ravens, but the Patriots are trying to bounce back. Julian Edelman's out. I'm going to run through the list of receivers. Tell me how notable these names are. Damier Byrd, Jacoby Myers, Gunnar Olszewski, I'm not sure exactly on the pronunciation, Isaiah Zuber, Mason Kinsey, Christian Wilkerson.
Yeah, Myers is the only one that is, I would think, recognizable.
Out of those six receivers, do you know how many were drafted?
Ooh, I'm going to say five? Four?
Oh, no, the answer is none.
Oh, no. Oh, you're kidding.
They were all undrafted. All undrafted, three of them this year. Three undrafted rookies. Yep. That's courtesy Ben Volen covering the New England Patriots.
Yikes.
Goodness. Hey, good luck, Cam.
Yeah, talking about the NFL, and you wonder why Tom Brady's just like living his best life right now down in the sunshine state of Florida. Retirement looks good for him, right?
Who would you rather have? Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Antonio Brown, Rob Gronkowski, or the list I just named?
I would like to have Chris Godwin and Mike Evans with all of their issues that they've had already this year. Chris Godwin, obviously questionable with the broken index finger on his left hand earlier this week. I would much rather have those guys than the guys that you just listed that are going to be playing without Julian Edelman. Hey, one thing I want to run by you before we get a break. I was thinking of during our best bet, and I want to place this bet this weekend, but if you talk me out of it, I will not do it. Las Vegas, 2.5-point underdog on the road. They're going to Cleveland. I just feel like taking the Raiders in that spot. I like your Raiders.
Yeah, I kind of like the Raiders too in that spot. I like them better in an underdog role, which they are, and they're obviously traveling here. If the offensive line can protect well enough, Myles Garrett is a scary person right now with the way that he's playing. The Browns, they're without Odell Beckham Jr., but last week when he went out, look at how Baker responded. So it would probably be a stay away, but if I had to pick a side, I would pick the Raiders side.
Okay, so yeah. If that
it's been
line
a weird
climbs
time for the Raiders. They had the COVID issues, and last week against the Bucks just got taken advantage of.
Yeah, really good team, though. Like you said, really the offensive line just didn't even practice leading up to that game. People were actually surprised that they still played that game. And didn't try to move it at all. So what you're saying is, if that line climbs at all in Cleveland's direction, take Vegas.
That's the way I would go. Okay. Yeah. And you know me, I'm leery of pumping up the Raiders, but that's probably the way I would go. Gruden as the underdog. He's the NFL Tom Herman. For me.
Okay. I like it.
Yeah.
So do you also put him in the underachieving category like Tom Herman, or just the underdog?
Out of time here, this segment on Sports 186-56-9900. If you would like to join us looking ahead to football this weekend, we'll talk to Will Shelton of Game Day on Rocky Top in 15 minutes. More Tennessee coverage for you this hour on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. This is Sports 180. Happy Halloween weekend coming up. Today's dad joke, Heather, was Halloween themed. Did you check it out yet?
I did check it out, so everybody can find that on not only Josh J. Ward on Instagram, but also on our Sports 180 page. Added a little gifts to it. And you know me, I'm a big fan of the topic you were talking about in professional sports. Maybe not so much in college sports, but I thoroughly endorsed it.
Josh J. Ward on the Instagram feed, and you can find us with the Sports 180 profile as well. Go follow, like, all that good stuff. We'll appreciate the social media boost. 656-9900 is the phone number if you would like to join us. By the way, at the end of last segment, as you were taking some unfair shots, I would say, at the well-run Las Vegas Raiders, they are playing the Browns this weekend. Your boy, Colin Cowherd, talking about the Cleveland Browns, it appears today, said that they are the most over-discussed team in professional sports. They have become the reality show of the NFL. You stick around because it's fun to watch them disintegrate. Wow.
Oh, golly. What has the election gotten to Cowherd, too? I mean, what's up with him just being a grump?
Well, he and Baker, they've had their beef. But you're right. I haven't seen the Tua stuff. But, the Browns, the Baker versus Cowherd beef, I guess, continues.
Yeah, he's over the top in that. He's just playing it up for dramatics because obviously it gets a lot of attention and that just brings his show more attention. So yeah.
The Browns have been respectable this year to this point.
They absolutely have. They're, what, a 5-win team? I mean, they're looking like they can make the playoffs as another wild card spot. I mean, you could,
they have a chance.
Yeah, yeah. You could legitimately see three AFC North teams make it. So who knows what is going to happen from here? I mean, this is a year where with the expanded playoffs, it doesn't mean as much, I think, in a normal year. But moving forward, it's going to be the new norm. But I like Baker and those guys. And you thought that they were going to crumble whenever Odell Beckham went out of the game, running down that interception. He's out for the season, like you noted a minute ago. But the fact that Baker kind of, it was almost like a relief. Like he was like, oh, Odell's back. Oh, Odell's out. Like I don't have to just look at him now and throw the ball to him. I thought Baker kind of relaxed and played really well down the stretch. So I'm anxious to see what happens. I just like your Raiders. I do think your Raiders are a better team than what their record says they are. I think they've had some tough opponents and some tough losses, including the Bucks. But I like your team.
They're an okay team. They're 3-3. It's funny, they're 3-3 with a win against the Chiefs. They only lost for Kansas City this season, which is something. But the Steelers-Ravens would be your marquee matchup of the weekend. I think most would agree on that because of the rivalry and how good both teams are. Steelers are the last unbeaten team. But there's some other good matchups. The Saints-Bears is good. A couple of two-loss teams. Saints looking to get Michael Thomas back into the offense, it looks like. Also, so that window is a good one. The 425 window, you have Saints, Bears, and Seahawks 49ers. Seahawks coming off their first loss of the season last week in a wild one with the Arizona Cardinals. San Francisco has done a good job to be 4-3 with all the injuries they suffered, especially on the defensive side. But the backfield on offense has been beaten up. And
wide
Kyle
receivers.
Shanahan's continued. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Really all over the place. Quarterback. Yeah. I mean, it's every group. And they're 4-3, and they're playing in probably the deepest division in the NFL. 1-4 is respectable for sure in the NFC West. So that's a good one on Sunday afternoon, but Kyle Shanahan's done one of the best coaching jobs in the NFL this year.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right in the fact that they have been able to navigate through just some. I mean, you look at what injuries have done to the Dallas Cowboys. Their season is absolutely over. The 49ers have had stretches without Jimmy G, like you were talking about. They've had stretches now Deebo Samuel and so many of their other players. I think that they can... they can at least give Seattle a really good game. I mean, you've seen now Seattle is susceptible to giving up some points. Look at what the Cardinals were able to do against them. So it's not like it's an unwinnable game. I think that game has a lot of intrigue. And you'd rather see that in the 8:20 spot than what you are getting in the 8:20 spot.
Cowboys-Eagles not doing it for you. The Eagles at 2-4-1 are 9.5-point favorites against the Cowboys.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's embarrassing.
Totally embarrassing. It's in Philly. Philly's going to kick the Cowboys' butts just like Washington did last week. I mean, it's just sad. I still obviously love the NFL, and I'm still all in because there are so many good storylines, but just absolutely depressed for my Cowboys and how this is going. And did you see the Mike McCarthy stuff that was going around yesterday with all his facial expressions? Like, I just kind of wanted to smack him. Like, I was just like, get that smirk off your face. You stink. You should have to sit here and answer whatever questions the media has to throw at you. So I was just very aggravated.
Remember when Dallas had Aikman, Emmett, and Michael Irvin?
Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah, it was awesome.
That was awesome.
It's been a while.
We'll come back.
Been a minute.
Speaking of, we'll shift back to Tennessee football. Will Shelton of GameDay on RockyTop.com will join us next. We'll look back at the first half. We'll look ahead to the second half. That's the bye week approach. We'll do that coming up next as Joel Silverberg has a midday sports minute for you here on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Tending to know what you're going to get into when you play Alabama, you at least saw Jarrett Garantano not turn it over. You saw Tennessee hit a couple plays downfield. It at least the idea that he's going to be the starting quarterback at Arkansas is less of a frustrating, I guess frustrating is the word I want to use. It's less of a frustrating thought for the Tennessee fan base than it was coming out of the Kentucky game. So like we saw on our site that, you know, those win totals took a dive after the Kentucky game down to close to 4, and then actually went up after the Alabama game, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense other than people were feeling extraordinarily pessimistic after the Kentucky game, and Alabama was just a little closer to business than usual with, you know, some confidence out of the offense that still has plenty of questions. So I think we've talked about this a bunch. One great thing about this year is kind of the blessing and the curse of the schedule is you got meaningful opportunities coming up. So you can win some of those games and put this thing back on track for a solid, you know, or even better season, and certainly a better future for Tennessee. Or if you lose those games, you're going to kind of continue some uncomfortable conversations about how much progress has actually been made. So it's important. This Arkansas game coming up next week is one of the more meaningful games that Pruitt will have coached in. And if Tennessee wins it, it will be immediately followed by an opportunity to beat a top 10 team if A&M keeps winning that's not Alabama or Georgia. So not a great week as kind of a long answer to that question, but, you know, not as bad as kind of the bottom falling out there against Kentucky.
Yeah, my win total took a hit. I'm ashamed to say there, Will Shelton, but I did. I had Tennessee beating Kentucky, so they can't finish 6-4 now in my mind. But just refocusing, retooling to get back on track over the next 5. What were the biggest points of you want to see Tennessee like get better at? Like, where do they have to get better to make sure they have a winning record over the second half of the schedule?
Well, I think, you know, it's in the same breath that we talk about, we need to measure this Tennessee team not by what they do against Alabama and Georgia, but by what they do against Texas A&M and Florida and Auburn. Well, two of those teams, A&M and Florida, how many points is Tennessee going to have to score to have a chance to win those games? I mean, this offense is going to have to score points against both of those teams to give themselves even an opportunity to win, and they're going to have to be both more consistent and much more explosive, I think, than what we've seen them be so far. So, you know, the quarterback situation, I think at this point, if you're still in pursuit of a meaningful presence, if we're not at the point of saying, let's just play Harrison Bailey and focus on next year, and I don't think Tennessee's close to that point just yet with all those meaningful games out there, you know what you're going to get at quarterback. So can you find it somewhere else? Is it playing more freshman at wide receiver? Is it getting healthier on the offensive line? Never mind what Tennessee did or didn't do against Georgia or Kentucky after they imploded. Is the offense we saw against South Carolina, is the offense we saw little pieces of against Alabama, is that going to be enough to give yourself a chance to beat Texas A&M or to beat the Gators at the end of the season? So they've got to get things going. And I think Arkansas may not be the full answer to that. I think Barry Odom's a great coach. Those guys have been well prepared for everybody they've seen thus far. So for Tennessee, you know, just at this point, just beating Arkansas is good work. But they're going to have to find, especially explosiveness, they're going to have to find that in the playbook. Because as good as the defense, I think we might have thought was after the first couple games, they're not good enough, I don't think. Their ceiling is not high enough to just go out and stop A&M or Florida without the offense, you know, putting up their end of the bargain. So that's the big thing. Even if it doesn't manifest itself against Arkansas or there's not a better answer at quarterback this season, where are the points coming from? Where are the big plays coming from? Are there any new pieces of that puzzle? That's a big key, I think, for Tennessee finding success in the second half of the season.
Will Shelton, game day on RockyTop.com. Will, would you like to try to forecast Tennessee's quarterback position for the second half of the season?
I think Garantano, as long as this season still has a chance to be meaningful, which would be beating Arkansas and then giving yourself a chance to beat A&M, Auburn, Florida, as long as that's still on the table, then I think you play Garantano. You know, going back to what I just said, though, part of trying to create more explosive plays probably is putting Garantano in some situations where he's also more likely to turn the ball over. And as we've talked about a bunch, when he turns it over once, more is on the way historically. So I would just stick with him. You know, Maurer, I feel really bad for Brian Maurer. That's a kid that got hurt. It's a kid that certainly plays hard. And a lot of the caveats with Brian Maurer are interceptions that he almost threw, you know, like balls that should have been picked off but weren't. So it's not that he has this whole history of super negative plays. It's that he has a number of plays that should have been negative that just didn't happen to him, maybe the way it happened to Garantano. But so I don't know, you know, if Garantano comes out and turns it over against Arkansas, they go right to Maurer. You know, is his long-term ceiling higher than Harrison Bailey? I don't know, but I think it's Garantano until you just absolutely have no reason to believe that you can compete in the present, that you can beat Texas A&M, that you can beat, you know, Florida or have a chance to win those games with him. And considering they played him the duration more or less of the Alabama game, I think it's going to be a lot more Jarrett Garantano the rest of the fall. Hopefully it's because he's giving you a reason to leave him in the game, but I think these guys really feel like this is the best option on Tennessee's roster. Doesn't invalidate questions about why isn't there anyone better at this point in time, but as long as you've still got meaningful wins out there, I don't think you punt to Harrison Bailey just yet.
That's always something for us to lament over, is like, why is Tennessee still in this position? But that's not for them to focus on. But I was going to ask you about that backup spot. If you are leaning towards Harrison Bailey being in the number two or Brian Maurer, but it sounds like you would be Brian Maurer would get your first look.
If it was me, and, you know, thank God I'm not the coach for a thousand different reasons, but if I was the coach, just Garantano's history, if he turns it over, I'm getting him out of the game, because so much more follows after that that is bad over enough time that makes me think that that's just part of who he is. And that being the case, then I would pull Garantano if things go poorly while the game is still within reach. And from there, I would go to Maurer with a chance, and similar to what they did last year. You go to your backup not to say, all right, let's get this guy some work, but go to your backup to say, we still have a chance to win this game. To me, again, it's no knock on Harrison Bailey. It's just a kid that didn't get spring practice and didn't get much fall practice by all accounts. So there would be a difference to me in going to the backup quarterback in trying to still win the game that you're in because Garantano turned it over, versus turning it over to the true freshman and just saying, all right, let's see what we got for next year. Now, if they lose to Arkansas or if they're not competitive against Texas A&M, especially if they can't produce on offense, then I think it shifts more to Harrison Bailey. But I would appreciate Garantano for what he is and what he isn't. And if he has a game where he isn't, then I would go to Maurer first while you've still got a chance to win that particular game.
Will Shelton, game day on RockyTop.com. What is going on at the website?
Expected win totals will be up there. Again, it's kind of a weird week. You got Tennessee's next two opponents are playing each other. So if you feel better about Arkansas after this week, you probably feel worse about Texas A&M, that sort of thing. But that'll be up there Monday. A good piece, a well-written piece, not an encouraging piece, from Joel Hollingsworth on our site this week, just kind of predicting the rest of Tennessee's schedule using his advanced stat stuff and all that. And something I'm working on for first of next week, just, you know, to kind of look at, Tennessee's not going to beat Alabama or Georgia until they get better players. But to get better players, you've got to win games. You've got to stay in these recruiting battles. And one thing that's really hurt Tennessee historically leading up to kind of this point in year 12 or 13 of whatever this is Tennessee has missed opportunities in the past to really take advantage when their rivals were down. And right now, I mean, with Saban and Georgia, we'll see what happens to Georgia the rest of the year. But that combination of Saban and Kirby Smart and Dan Mullen at your three biggest rivals, that might be the biggest obstacle Tennessee has tried to climb with the head coaches that their three rivals put together, of those programs really having it rolling. So it's from that perspective, it's more of an uphill climb for Jeremy Pruitt, not just because Tennessee's been down so long, but it's hard for me to envision one of those three schools kind of falling in on itself the way it did a little bit with McElwain or Muschamp or Alabama before Saban. So we'll take a look at some more of that stuff on Monday and certainly get you ready for Arkansas as well.
Hey, favorite scary movie before we let you go?
I really love some of the more psychological stuff. What's the Harrison Ford? What Lies Beneath? I was in college when that came out, the 90s or the early 2000s. I think that's a sneaky, underrated scary movie.
Michelle Pfeiffer, right? In that with it, his co-star?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Great movie.
Okay. Very good choice here. I like it.
Yeah. If weird stuff starts happening in your house 24 hours after you buy it, just move. Like, if your dog just randomly dies and he's a healthy dog, just move. You
never run away from a challenge. Never.
You have bought the wrong home.
Never run away from a challenge. Is that what you said? That's good. Josh, you probably have a very different list then, I would imagine, if that's your mindset.
Yeah, football. I just went straight football coach on you there, Will Shelton. That's my takeaway with What Lies Beneath. Will Shelton, game day on RockyTop.com is the website. Hey, Will, we appreciate it. Thank you, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, thank y'all.
Yeah, I just got to rub some dirt on it there, Heather.
Yeah, you do. I mean, I told you, like, Law and Order SVU and, like, Criminal Minds started getting too intense for me. Like, the older I get, the more of a scaredy cat I am. So I do blame it also on our surroundings. It's pretty isolated out here. Like, I don't need any of the dogs barking at 2 o'clock in the morning after I've just watched Silence of the Lambs or something. That would just put me over the top.
You like a good 3:30 in the afternoon Silence of the Lambs viewing to just get you through to dinner time? We'll come back here on Sports 180. We're with you until 3 o'clock. We have a lot to cover between now and then, getting you ready for the weekend, final weekend of October, right here on 99.1, the Sports Animal. We're back on Sports 180. Thank you for being with us. We're talking about, during the break there a moment ago, the scariest games for Tennessee fans to go revisit. You go at that from a number of angles. Like, the Kentucky game 2 weeks ago would qualify in this conversation, because that's not something you want to see again if you're a Tennessee fan. But you could also look at Tennessee football at its best, where there were some opportunities. Joel, you mentioned the 0-1 SEC title game. That's one where if you win it, you go play for a national championship in the Rose Bowl against Miami, which was the expectation, by the way, after beating Florida at the end of that 0-1 regular season. So you could look at it from a just really disappointing standpoint with where your program is, in the loss against Kentucky, the Georgia State loss last year, the blanking of Tennessee by Georgia in 2017 when things were about to truly fall apart for Butch Jones. Or you could go with 0-1, the 96 Memphis game. So, hey, thanks for the fun here, Josh. I'm sure you're
no
thinking
kidding
out there. But the scary Tennessee football games for fans to go relive or revisit.
Yeah, there.
By the way, why did I list them all? I should have said you guys name them.
Yeah, I was about to say there are.
Now people are
going to
be mad at me.
A few that were scary. And going back to that 0-1 SEC title game, epic foreshadowing of what just a thorn in Tennessee's side, in everybody's side, really, in college football, that Nick Saban was going to be. Just incredible.
Yeah, that was a big hello everybody game. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, just the worst. Why couldn't he have stayed in the NFL? Wouldn't even be having these conversations. Doesn't he want to go prove that he can be the big fish in the big pond? Come on, Nick. You need another shot at the old NFL.
Yeah, well, if Drew Brees had been cleared, maybe it would have worked out that way. But instead, he wasn't. He ended up in New Orleans. They got Dante Culpepper in Miami. And now Nick Saban has a bunch of national titles with Alabama.
Yeah. Man, what a domino effect. The butterfly effect of the Drew Brees not being cleared.
Yeah, no doubt one of the greatest in sports history. Sports butterfly effects would be the Drew Brees, Dante Culpepper free agency.
I remember at one point in time, Dante Culpepper, which I totally understand now, the older you get, you can just do the most routine things and your body just freaks out and something happens. But he was bending over to pick up one of his kids who was like by the edge of the pool. He was just bending over and something cracked in his knee and he was just out for an extended period of time. He was like, I don't know what happened. I was literally just picking my child up.
Yeah, the thing with Culpepper, who was, before his injury issues, a really good player. I mean, he's a really good quarterback in Minnesota, but they end up not getting Brees, who goes to New Orleans and is fine. And instead, Miami gets Dante Culpepper, who has a just continuation of the knee issues. So, man, that really didn't work out for Miami.
Yeah, that did not. And, you know, the second part, multiple butterfly effects in that, because we always forget about Rich Rodriguez taking the Alabama job. Why did he back out of that? I mean, so hate him and hate the doctor that didn't clear Drew Brees. Both of them in the same category. They are off my Christmas card list, Josh Ward, forever.
Oh, you're not sending them Christmas cards anymore. Okay. That's tough.
I mean, golly.
Just, you know, who knows? If Rich Rod had stuck with Alabama, maybe Nick Saban would have ended up at Tennessee. Never know.
I don't know how we connect all those dots, but man, he would look good in orange. I will say that.
Maybe Saban takes the Michigan job instead of Rich Rodriguez. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe so. All right. Happy early birthday to Nick Saban. Tomorrow's his birthday.
Undefeated on his birthday, when coaching on his birthday, by the way.
Really? What a great pop-up fact. I did not. Do you happen to know what his record is?
I do not.
It's not many games, right?
I would imagine not.
Yeah, I can't imagine it's very many.
Yep. Nick Saban, he's a Halloween baby.
Halloween baby, yeah, that's why they've dubbed him Nick Satan in some circles. I think that's terrible.
Well, I don't think that's the only reason, but that goes into the theme. He's been quite successful.
Also, doesn't he eat an extra oatmeal cream pie for breakfast? He usually downs two Little Debbies a day, and I think he gets an extra one on his birthday. So kudos.
Is that
to
right?
Him. Yeah. According to Ms. Terry.
Allows an extra one. Yeah, oatmeal cream pies and coffee. Get the day going.
Man. What a life. If I wasn't so worried about trying to lose this 15 pounds that just keeps plaguing me since having kids, I would love an occasional oatmeal cream pie.
Yep. He and Warren Buffett. Buffett's McDonald's every morning, right?
Is he really?
I think that's right.
I did not know that. Hey, I'm a big fan. Egg McMuffin, and now they have the Egg White Delight. Fantastic. I think I'm only 176 calories, something like that. Yeah, it's great. Maybe skip the hash brown. Just get the sandwich and a coffee, black coffee. There you go. Delicious.
All right. I will email our sales staff and tell them they've got some billing to do, some invoices to send to Little Debbie and to McDonald's. And we'll come back for our final hour of Sports 180, 656-9900. If you would like to join us, we'll get you ready for the weekend. We have another pop-up fact that I think you will like if you are a Tennessee Titans fan, especially. We'll have that for you in the next hour and some picks. You want to listen? Sports betting going live on Sunday. Fat Jack will join us at 2:30 right here on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal.